Welcome to TA1, everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and then some. I'm your host, legendary Randy Erickson. Digging out from our first snow. I don't mind the October snow because it's going to go away. And apparently we were just right on the edge because we got like 14 inches in 20 minutes in town. It's all gone. They got almost zero. Anyway, I hate snow. Maybe because snow is actually water and I don't like water, so that's why I don't like snow. Anyway, what's going on? Big announcement from AR Georgia, probably by the time you hear this. I can't believe Jeff didn't tell me first, so we could have brought you a little exclusive here, but, you know, that's Jeff. He's a flake. Not really. I just had to say that. Got some really good episodes lined up here, and we will have a block of episodes with all the U.S. teams from Worlds, maybe even a few of the, if they're there, they're not foreign teams, are they? The teams from other countries. So we'll be working on that in the next few weeks. Next Wednesday I'm headed to Road America in Wisconsin for the sports car race. Something a little new, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to having two cars of in-car camera. One race is eight-hour race on Saturday and a seven-hour race on Sunday. So that will be much footage to go through and find the cool spots. But hey, I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully I will be doing some more of it in the future when I'm not doing adventure race stuff. So anyway, let's get on with this. This one was pretty fun with the Wilderness Wenches, and you should enjoy listening to it. So remember, slow is fast. Fast is good. Take some chances, but be safe and have fun. No, wait. Have an adventure, and thanks for listening. We'll talk to you. Hopefully I'll get one out that will come out while I'm gone next week. So not promising, but well, I promise. All right. Bye.
How are you?
Oh, hold on. Let me acknowledge that there. Hey, I just got a message from Bria. She said she's running a couple minutes late, and Lisa should be here is in the next minute or so, I would imagine.
Yeah, she let me know too. I said, that's fine. I'm just sitting here working, so my schedule's flexible.
Okay, great. Well, nice to meet you. I know who you are through the social media venues and from seeing people announce who you are, but I haven't technically met you, so hi.
That's true. But this is the new normal, so we all have friends we've never met, right?
Right, right.
and some of them are really good friends that you've never met.
Right. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, how are you?
Hey. Good, how are you doing?
Not too bad. Try and get organized. And oh. Hi, I'm Lisa. I don't think we met either.
Hi, Lisa. I'm Randy.
Very nice to meet you. I heard your name announced early on, I think, in announcements. And they're like, oh, yeah, Randy. Everybody knows Randy. I'm like, who's Randy? So nice to meet you.
You too. You know, that is one of the not problems, but things that I try to be aware of is that the fact that a lot of adventure racers know each other. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes forget that there's people out there that don't get our inside jokes.
It's good though, because in a way that presents saying, hey, this is a community, as long as to balance out the jokes, it's also like, hey, welcome. Here's a way to come join in these jokes, which it's been. So.
Yeah. Well, it is something that I'm very aware of and try to make sure that I meet the new people whenever I can. It's a little tough when there's like 100 teams and everybody's running around, but.
Yeah. And kind of going off of time and trying to sprint.
Yeah.
I think that was one of our regrets is in some ways we had an opportunity of staying at somebody's house that we knew living nearby, but not being able to stay after the race to like actually socialize with people would have been really nice.
Yeah.
But when you're not running around.
Yeah. It is one of the things that sometimes I wish that races made it mandatory that you stayed till morning and you could socialize and stuff like that. But you can't do that. People have real lives, unfortunately.
Yeah. And finances.
Yes, there's that part too. Yeah. Let's gotta go home and work. That sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So, some of the best races that I've ever been to are the ones where you have a day or a day and a half afterwards just to hang out, decompress, and chat with people and dry gear out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How long have you been doing this world for?
Since 2009.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Yeah. So I've done
a few years.
Yeah. Somewhere around 30 expedition races and maybe probably only about a dozen 24 hours.
Okay.
I really wasn't doing much of those until a couple of years ago.
Define how long is defined as expedition?
More than 24 hours, basically 3 days to 10 days.
Gotcha.
C2C World Championships, Primal Quest, Cowboy Tough, those kind of those kind of races. So,
and are those more of your enjoyment? Huh?
It's very they're almost completely different types of they are two completely different types of racing.
Yeah.
So with an expedition race, you have time to put out a lot more content, and you don't have to be quite as focused to start. But with a 24 hour, I need to get there preferably 2 days before, and I need to know exactly where everything is, where all the TAs are, and I will try to go basically drive the course at least twice beforehand, because you don't have time for get a 24-hour race. So with an expedition race, you have that time to figure out stuff and you can get to hang out with maybe a team a little bit more, stuff like that, where it's in a 24-hour race, you basically just you have to make a plan for the first couple hours and then whatever. and you tend to end up seeing a lot of the same people in a 24-hour race, because you'll kind of get in their sphere of influence, and it's hard to get out. So, with an expedition race, you could be at the front of the field and then take a couple hours and go clear to the back of the field and see those people and go back forward and that kind of stuff. So, but they're both fun, just different,
right?
You'll figure that out when you do your first expedition race.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see, huh?
We'll see. Yeah, I know. You guys, you've got the bug. I can tell.
Each time we race, the bug bites a little harder.
Yeah, so true.
Yeah. So, well, why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Okay.
So,
I'm Lisa.
And who are you? What are you?
Oh, who am I? I don't know. Yeah. I live in Duluth, Minnesota, like the other couple of folks here. Work at a hospital to keep my head above water and play around in the woods to keep my brain sane. Yeah. And it works pretty well.
Yeah, except it's Duluth, right?
Oh, the Duluth folks, up there in the north.
So we might have to make... Yeah. Come on. Whenever I talk to anybody from New Jersey, I make fun of the Sopranos. So, you guys got to get Lally the Oli and Lena. Yeah. So, and you are?
I'm Karina, also from Duluth. I work at the University of Minnesota Duluth. I'm a therapist or a mental health counselor there with students. And just like Lisa, most of my spare time is spent in the woods playing, having fun with friends, trying to get outside as much as possible.
So, mental health counselor, you fit right in with adventure racing. do you have a clinical professional opinion of what makes a good adventure racer?
Ooh. I would say, like, this for a lack of a better way of putting it, in sort of a cheesy way, sort of a can-do, curious attitude. Folks that are willing to be curious about where their bodies and minds can take them, and folks that are willing to have fun or make light of really sometimes stressful or tiring or painful situations. And then I would think two folks that can communicate well with team, with their teammates.
Interesting. Do you ever find yourself when you're racing, look at your teammates and think, that's pretty interesting?
That's probably all the time.
That's probably
it's
a yes or no question. Yeah.
my teammates are awesome. And I think that's the best part about my teammates is I think we can have a space that's generally enjoyable and fun and make light of however we're feeling most of the time. So I think our ability to keep morale up and encourage and emotionally and physically and otherwise support one another is a big asset of ours.
Do you think that's something because you're an all women's team, or would you have that? Could you have the same dynamic if you went with a mixed team?
I think it's just trying to find the right folks. Ultimately, yeah. I think just because the three of us women have spent so much time together in so many mildly stressful situations, we've gotten to read each other really well. And if that happened to be with a fella or whatnot, and we got into that mutual terms where we're able to read and understand where they're at, mm-hmm. I think we could do just as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's not a man woman thing. It's a teammate thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so. I think there is something kind of fun and special about it for sure. But yeah, I do think you can find or build a similar team dynamic.
Yeah.
In a co-ed team as well.
Yeah. Is there a reason that you're an all-woman team? Other than you're all three friends and you're all women?
Yeah,
I think it happened by chance mostly.
Yeah, to be honest. And I think just in Duluth, we have a pretty strong, sorry, my dog's right here below me, but pretty strong.
Mine's outside.
Yeah, so if I'm like petting something, it's my dog. But in Duluth, we do have a strong community, and specifically sometimes even just the women getting together, because, you know, where you don't feel like you have to push yourself to maybe a level that some of the gents can go. We all have found that we're in mutual strength realms. And so it's fun for us just to get together as a group of women. And so I think it just kind of fell together that way.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, I mean, I've heard, you know, talking to other women that's pretty common, that it's really nice not to have to think that you have to keep up with somebody faster.
Yeah. But I mean, these two gals push me, you know,
yeah.
And it's, you know, if we found somebody that we could communicate with at the same level where we can be like, mm-hmm. Hey, we're pushing too much. I need to step back a little bit. My rate needs to step back. I think sometimes within gender roles, we kind of catch ourselves where we forget we can communicate that bluntly to all genders. And I think that's more of the holdback sometimes.
Yeah.
There's sort of a different level of trust and ability to relate about different things, I think. And I don't know if there's specifics that I can name off the top of my head, but there is sometimes that sense. And I think the other thing too, is it is nice to be a part of a women's team that we can push really hard. You know, I think we've talked before and ever since that race that now that we know what it's like to go for that long in that sale race, we could definitely push for harder. And I think be pretty competitive with all of the other teams, the women's teams. So I think there's something special in that too. So.
Yeah. We're going to just talk in some generalities here for a little bit. So we're going to get into very specific race things and backgrounds and stuff, but all right. If you ever race with a man, are you definitely going to call him mandatory equipment? Just say yes.
Go with that.
No. So where what's your background? We'll start with Lisa. What brought you into adventure racing? And what did you do beforehand?
I mean, if you go way back, I guess I was a gymnast growing up. I was a competitive gymnast throughout high school, and I grew up in southern Minnesota, actually. Trails are not necessarily as much of a thing down there. But my family my parents were whitewater canoers and kayakers. And so we were out doing that oftentimes in the summer, and camping and biking and bike touring. And so I kind of grew up in that, touching the outdoors and like being willing to be uncomfortable and challenging yourself, and you're wet and cold and you just make it work. You bring the right gear and that kind of thing. That was part of my upbringing. And I've since then fallen more and more into it, just amongst the different places I've lived. I've gotten to be able to do different sports a little bit more or a little bit less, depending on the environment. And Duluth has worked really well in terms of finding a community that they're all willing to kind of do it. And
yeah.
It's really fun.
So, hi, Bria. Getting connected. Oh. Says connecting to audio.
There we go.
Howdy.
Hello.
Welcome to the party.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we'll get back to the festivities.
All right. I'm Bria Shirky. I'm from Ely, Minnesota.
Cool. So, Lisa, I wanted to know, when you were young and the family was doing all that kind of, you know, whitewater paddling and stuff, were you into it or were you like, oh, geez, I got to go with mom and dad again?
I think I was middle ground because initially I have an older sibling. And so somehow I was stuck in the middle of the canoe. It drove me bonkers because you couldn't quite actually do it, you know. Everybody else was like in control and you kind of had to let loose of all control, so that frustrated me. But I was always willing and happy to be outside and always happy to do that portion, but I wanted to be the person doing it. I wanted to be the person that was pushing my body. It kind of, with that upbringing and that being our vacations, was either going to the Boundary Waters or doing a bike trip. It was, you pushed your body and then that dinner tasted really good, you know? And I really enjoyed that. And I didn't understand when I was growing up, I didn't understand the concept of like going to the beach as a vacation. I'm like, how do you enjoy your dinner? You know, you gotta enjoy your dinner. So, I did enjoy it thoroughly growing up for sure.
Very cool. So Karina, what was your background?
I would say mine sounds a little similar to Lisa's. I grew up in the Fargo-Moorhead area. It's pretty flat, not a lot of topography, but was fortunate that I had parents that took me out a lot. I grew up in the Boundary Waters doing canoe trips, winter camping, backpacking in the mountains. Specifically, I was the oldest and my mother isn't as much of an outdoors woman. So I was sort of my dad's outdoor partner growing up. And in high school, just played, you know, soccer, the sort of like stereotypical sports. And then as I've gotten older, I've just done more of that, expanded different trips. And then having lived in Duluth for the last 7 or so years, expanded to biking, doing a lot more rock climbing, and then meeting a bunch of really rad women to hang out and be in the woods with. So generally similar to Lisa's, I just got sort of brought up in the world of, you know, being able to be adaptable, flexible in the woods, being able to maybe suffer a little bit, enjoy things, be uncomfortable.
Cool. All right, Bria. So what's your background? Where did you, what brought you to this weird world?
Yeah. Can you hear me? I've got a headset on. So just to make sure.
You sound good.
Okay. Yeah. I was born and raised in Ely, Minnesota. I've moved back since I spent most of my 20s outside of the state and the country. And I live on a lake that is half in the Boundary Waters now.
My parents, I was lucky to have grown up with very outdoor, adventurous parents, similar to Lisa and Karina. My dad has an adventure travel business. So summer vacations or family vacations, we would be guiding dog sledding trips in the Boundary Waters in the winter. We've led trips to Greenland, and actually we found that the North Pole as a family, and sometimes we'd go out to Eastern Russia. And so, yeah, my dad was the co-leader on the first expedition to the North Pole in 1987 with Will Steger. And so that kind of launched just, a lifetime of high adventure, mostly Arctic travel, but I got the bug at an early age and became a wilderness instructor for various wilderness therapy programs. And I worked as a Knowles instructor and I teaching alpine and mountaineering courses. And then came back to Minnesota in my early 30s, and I've kind of regrounded myself in northern Minnesota, which I think we're really lucky to have such a huge playground. And kind of similar to Lisa and Karina, just we love to bike and canoe and trail run, and it's just endless adventure up here. And we're really lucky to have a 4.5 million acre wilderness area as our backyard. So all three of us we do a lot of trips together up here, day trips, and Lisa and I have canoed across the Boundary Waters together. So there's always something new to do here.
Yeah, very cool. So how many times growing up did you show up all the men on expeditions?
I mean, it's never, I don't know if I speak for all of us, but being, how do I say this? A woman has never been a hindrance. I've always kept up. And I remember being little, like 11, going on a backpacking trip with my dad in Ellesmere Island and like keeping up with the adults. And I've never felt inferior or that I couldn't do something that a male counterpart could do better. And certainly, I'm sure they're physiologically, yes, there are times where, of course, but pretty much, feel pretty confident in our abilities. So,
So we'll start with Bria with this. Was there a moment growing up when you said, yes, I can do anything?
I feel like I always felt that way. I was never taught otherwise. I mean, for me, I grew up having to feed 70 sled dogs before I went to school since I was little. And that was kind of like growing up on a farm, I guess. And it was just never a question that, and I don't think gender was ever a question, whether or not I could or couldn't do something. So I was pretty feisty.
But I mean, not even specifically, because you're a female, just because you did something and you're like, I did this. Yeah. There's nothing I can't do.
I mean, when I was in, ninth grade, my dad and I skied across northwestern Greenland together. And I think living in 10 below weather with Inuit hunters was like pretty badass. And coming back to school and getting the like show and tell was like, no offense. I mean, it's a small town. Ely's like 4,000 people. So it's a little, was a little out of the ordinary. And so I guess, it gave me it probably boosted my ego a little bit. It certainly made me feel like I could do anything at that point. So,
Well, this is what I love about doing this podcast, is listening to people say, when I was a teenager, I skied across Greenland with my dad. No big deal. Lisa, was there a time when something that, same question, basically, that you were just like, bring it.
I mean, I think that was the good part about the gymnastics world, the common phrase that was used was, I can flip 4 feet over a 4-inch beam like a girl. Like,
yeah,
watch me go, you know? And that was pushed upon me at a young age. I do think in some ways I had a little bit, well, I had a very different raising than Bria. Yeah. But
yeah,
in the fact that my parents are more in, or my dad specifically is more in that, like, you have to like one track focus, where I am a one track focus person, that I've had to learn as I've gotten older that, wait, I can screw up and I can be dumb and that's okay. And like, that's something I think I'm still growing with, because I wasn't a very different background in that capacity, you know. I grew up near Mayo Clinic, where it's a very, like, I don't know,
yeah,
a little bit more suit and tie button up kind of place, and it's just a little different in that capacity. But so I'm still working on it. But yeah,
yeah. Well, seem to be doing okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm doing great. But you know, it's just a different in terms of that window of when that epiphany was like, oh yeah, you can do that.
So, all right, one question, and then we're going to get to Karina, because I can't wait to hear her story. But what's it like the first time you do a backflip on the beam?
Oh, my gosh. You want to take a crap on the beam first? I mean, holy moly. I wouldn't say that it's easy on the brain, especially as you get older. All of a sudden, fear comes into play, and you don't have that for some reason as a kid, where you think, oh, yeah, I'm not going to break. And then all of a sudden, you're like, wait. I could break, you know, it makes it a little harder, but.
Yeah. Okay. I'm curious, because I don't think I could even walk on it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It comes with time. You could do it.
Yeah.
We saw you did a backflip this spring, and I'd never seen you do that before. And we were so blown away. Like, where did that come from?
She's still got
really
it.
Fun. It was like a good party trick.
Somewhere just, like, in there.
Yeah,
awesome.
So, all right, Karina, what was your moment of epiphany that you could kick everybody's ass?
I'd say a little bit similar to Bria's. I grew up with a dad who did some guiding a lot of times with young adults or adults. And I was pretty little when he started pushing me to go on those trips, and he would always put me in sort of like his little helper role. And I remember when I was little, definitely having hesitations and fears. And there were definitely times where I did quite well, and people were really surprised when they were initially really nervous that I should show up at all in the first place. And I think as I had done things over time with my dad, different trips, you know, similar to Lisa and Bria, we canoed across the Boundary Waters together as well, or done other things, that like each time I think you take that step, that sort of fuels a little bit more confidence that you can try and do something new. But I'll also be transparent and say, it's not that every day I think I can do everything. There's definitely days where I have doubts and hesitations. And I think a big key though is just learning to be curious about what you can do. And I think that's been a bigger part of it than maybe even feeling invincible, but just like wanting to try and wanting to be curious. And sometimes, like Lisa mentioned, that you fail, you mess up, it's not pretty, you don't feel invincible. And other times, yeah, you're competitive, you beat people at something, or you do something in better style and in better fitness than you ever thought you could, and it sets you up for success later.
Nice. All right. Okay, let's have a little competition. Who's had the worst Boundary Water trip of the three of you?
Probably Bria.
I was going to say, I was Bria, because she's up there way more. Yeah. Just by sheer number alone, she's got to have some good and probabilities. Okay. Yeah.
All right, well, let's narrow it down. Who's spent the most time on a single trip in a tent because you couldn't move?
Probably Bria as well.
You know, yeah. But Lisa and I, though, when Lisa and I did a big Boundary Waters trip, 2 years ago, we crossed the whole Boundary Waters, and there was one huge storm where we there was so much rain and wind, and we were worried like the trees were gonna blow down on our tent, that we left set up the canoe like over our tent as an extra protection. It felt like we were in a hurricane. I think we actually illegally camped in Canada because it was so did. We were trying to protect it. I don't know if that's public. Well, okay,
it was for our safety. We got to an island that technically was, I think, maybe Canada, but we needed to be on land and we needed to be safe as humans.
It was like torrential. I mean, that's with, you know,
lightning, thunder,
climate change, wind. Oh. The wind up here has been just become as incredible. And so we get these massive wind storms that just throw you for a loop and a lot of problem solving. So yeah, Lisa and I shared that one for sure.
Nice. Okay, who started you all on the adventure racing kick?
I know I heard it from both Lisa and Bria. I know. Yeah, I think I heard it from both of you at different points, and I don't know if the two of you had talked about it at the same point or not. So that's my vote.
Yeah, I think so you and I just talked about it one day. We both had been thinking about it about the same time. And I think with COVID and stuff, we just hadn't been able to get out as much, and we were looking for other adventures. And this spring, we figured that actually the Wisconsin Racing Series has a ton of races within a reasonable drive. And we've got a really cool crew of other women in Duluth. There's more than just the three of us. There's seven of us total. And yeah, we put a team together and went after it.
What got adventure racing on your radar? I mean, you're all adventurers. But what got adventure racing specifically? You know?
I don't remember where I specifically heard about it. I know I grew up and there was a woman I knew that did orienteering races. And then I had heard something about Stubborn Fool from somebody back in college passively, which is a race up in northern Wisconsin near the, I think it's north of Wausau or something, where they paddle on the Wolf River. And so I just had heard it through the grapevine.
Mm-hmm. I have the last 10, 12 years kind of have followed Chelsea and Jason Magnus out of Bend, Oregon. They're part of the Bend racing team. I think they're a really cool couple, and they've done a lot for the Acro community and the Highline community, adventure racing community. And I always just thought what they did was awesome, and I never thought of it as something that I would do. And then I think it all just came together, and we realized there was extra races in Wisconsin, and had some time to do it. So kind of decided to give it a try. But yeah, they have done a lot for the community. I don't know if they know how far reaching their influence has been. So for me,
I think they do. I think I've told them. So Karina, I mean, when they came to you and said, well, we're using this narrative. When they came to you and said adventure racing, did you know adventure racing, or did you say, what's that?
I think I had the gist of it. I don't think I knew the depth and detail, but I knew sort of the general disciplines and was pretty excited about it. Definitely was not on my radar ahead of time. I tend to focus more on running and climbing and things. And I think I had been picking around between these two about different fun trips to do. And they just sort of responded back with well, what about this thing? This is new. And I said, sure. Yeah, let's do it. Sounds great.
Yeah. Nice. So did you guys do the first race together, or were there other teammates, or what was the logistics?
There was one other teammate beyond us. The first race we did was the three of us and one other gal, Murray. And it was a 6 or an 8 hour, I forget.
The 6 hour.
6 hour.
All right. So I like to ask this question of people that maybe are a little more experienced, but what would each of you go back and tell yourselves now before that first race?
Oh, before the first one?
Yeah. Any lessons you've learned, things like that?
I think for me, it would be just reading the general. I mean, there's so much, there are so many educational resources out there, videos on orienteering, videos on just sort of like, and information, I think, on the general strategy. I'm pretty sure I just showed up and was, had no plan, no idea of how things worked out. And I think just having sort of maybe like a zoomed out picture so that I could go and actually be more efficient in some ways. Would probably be the main thing for me. I knew, I'm like, oh, I know how to paddle. I know how to bike. I know how to run and orienteer. And then just like figuring out how as a team that that works and how people strategize, that would have been helpful.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
I think that's something we're still figuring out though.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
So yeah. To tell our old self that is like kind of telling our current self that like, hey, we should work on that.
Yeah.
Okay. So who navigates? I think a big
I was just going to say, I think the other piece, because you're doing so many, three different sports really, and there's all these transitions, is how much time is lost or gained in just all the series of seemingly little things. So knowing where your bike pump is and you're having that, your salt tabs easily accessible and all the little things that add time. Throughout, especially the longer races or even the shorter races where you don't have that much time to like futz with finding your bike patch, you know. And so having things well organized would be something I would have reminded myself. And then also, again, which we're still working on, is just looking at the big picture and really talking as a team on good strategy. And I don't know if that's something we can remind ourselves or we'll just continue to learn as we do more races, because it seems like we're getting better and better at it. Yeah. And I'm really excited to clear a course next year. Yeah. Hopefully right away.
Hey, it only takes 10,000 hours and you're good at it. So no problem.
Yeah.
But there's three of you. So that's only 3,300 hours each. So piece of cake. So, all right. So I was going to say, who navigates and how did you learn to navigate?
Bria, I think, is our main navigator.
I've been the main navigator on all the races. I do teach navigation as a Knowles instructor. It's mostly in the Alpine setting. But I think we're all pretty equally skilled. And Lisa and I have kind of tag teamed. Lisa's definitely caught some of my major mistakes, like the big one that I did at Nationals. And so we're all still learning together. I think, again, like kind of what Karina was saying, we're all pretty strong runners, canoers, bikers. And actually, I do think the majority of the time our navigation is pretty on point. And it's super helpful when there's two of us kind of working together. I think having someone to bounce ideas off of, or the three of us too. It's kind of a strategy of like how many minds can work together. Sometimes it's helpful, it's all three of us. Sometimes it's just easy. I can just take over and just go for it. So I think we're kind of figuring out that rhythm. But I hope that in future races, we all can take turns really and be equal navigators. Because I think that's part of the fun and also it's empowering. So
How helpful was it the fact that you live in that area and you know the terrain for navigating? Because I know Rootstock had problems and Brett's one of the best in the world. So how big a help was that to know the area?
It's very subtle terrain differences. And so seeing, you don't have a big mountain that's obvious there weren't many rivers. I don't know. Honestly, we don't do that much navigation in the woods around here. We do a lot of lake navigation, though. And I think we're actually really good at paddling and navigating. Like we did a river race, our 18-hour race, and we had that navigation dialed. We didn't use lights. We just used the curve of the river. And the I felt that was really exciting to feel like pretty solid about water navigation. So it's been helpful to have the Boundary Waters as a training ground for that kind of navigating. And I would love to see a race somewhere in northern Minnesota where you have to navigate all the different islands, because it can be tricky when you don't just have like a big circle lake to navigate on.
Well, tell Earl and Emily to put a race on a lake.
We are, well, there's discussions happening. Yes, we would love to maybe get one going in Duluth or maybe Ely or something.
So, I mean, did you guys go to Nationals because you wanted to go to Nationals, or did you go to Nationals because it was close, or do you went to Nationals because you needed you wanted to jump up to that, get that 30-hour race in?
I think all three. Can you just put all three in one little bundle? I think a little bit of our decision was a little bit of each of those.
Yeah.
That it was, you know, if we're going to do it some year, why not do it when it's an hour and a half away from us?
Yeah.
And why not do it when we've qualified? You know, like, we didn't know at the beginning of the season anything, like, we would qualify. And so why not?
Yeah. What jumped out the first thing when, you know, let's say when you got maps and you're looking at a 30-hour race, you know, new territory, what was that feeling like when you got all that stuff and had to lay them all out and figure out what they were for?
Karina or Lisa,
I wish there was more dry spaces. I remember just thinking, like, why is there not a dry surface? These are not waterproof maps. Like, dry, please.
So where'd you guys go work on the mat?
I think we cleared a spot on the cement floor. We think we started on a table. Our maps were getting wet, so we moved to the floor.
I think I really liked how Nationals set up the clover leaf in the beginning. We certainly, I don't know how you train. I'd love to hear how some of the elite teams like work on that first hour and what their strategy is, like their piece by piece strategy, because we were like, okay, let's just like pick one map at a time. And like, all right, we didn't have enough time for the last three maps. So we literally just like shoved them in the map bag and figured we'd kind of look at them later on. And that, I know for me, that was the biggest take home is like, this again, the big piece strategy. And I think we would have picked the E section first because that was the one that you had to finish before 9 p.m. or you had to be off of by 9. We probably would have paddled last because there would have been less wind, and maybe it's easier to navigate on the water in the dark since we know that's one of our strong points. And so using the time of day and the weather in conjunction with our strengths, and then also recognizing like the Black Diamond Trail, maybe we needed to do that earlier so we had more energy. Although I would say we actually did really well on that, the Black Diamond mountain bike section. I think we got 10th overall, 11th. So,
that's not bad. Well, I mean, from what I've heard, I think Paula kind of thought that people would do that first clover leaf and then come back and deal with the second half of the race. And I mean, even Brett with Rootstock said, you know, that's what they should have done, is just focused on that, come back. He actually said they should have missed the start and spent more time on the maps before the start. So so you guys did good. So what did
that's
you start
encouraging
with?
To hear.
Yeah. What was the question?
What did you start with? What leg?
A. Yeah. Just because I think, honestly, if you're reading from the front to back of the book and your brain is trying to process the big picture and it just doesn't, and you're like, A sounds good. A starts with the letter A, and then you can just figure it out from there, you know? But that we got ourselves in a pickle, though, because of it.
Yeah,
that was the running section. And there was a lot of people that were also starting with it. So we kind of felt like, oh, well, the rest of the crowd's doing it, but maybe we should have kept tabs on what Rootstock and Rim Mountain we're doing.
Yeah.
Well, but we had to submit our location of which route we were going to do at like 15 minutes before, where we didn't know everybody, you know, so we wouldn't have been able to know that.
Well, how did it go for you then to start with A?
We did good with A, but by starting A, we got ourselves in a slight pickle with the wind on the lake doing 26 miles in wind was a little bit exhausting. And then not being able to repeat a sport made us have to drop E. We just had to kick it out, and we ended up not doing section E of the clover leaf.
Yeah. I'm not sure that was a bad decision.
Yeah.
Having been up there and looked at the, you know, being literally being lost, it might not have been a bad decision because it was a 2-hour bike ride.
Yeah. Just,
you know, out and back. So that's a lot. I mean, that's a big chunk of your race. So, so this is the part where I just say, tell me about your race, and I don't have to ask any questions. So you started with A, then, you know, just kind of walk through the rest of the race. Good points, bad points, where you liked each other, where you hated each other.
Serena?
Sure, yeah, we started with A. I felt like the orienteering in that first section went really smoothly. I think Rhea, you probably feel the same, Lisa, as well. I think we were moving pretty efficiently through there, and we had a pretty good plan to tackle the paddling section. We did that. Wait, did we do the biking or paddling next? Now I'm
we did buzzing. B, the yeah. long paddle, and we got yeah, all paddle. The stuff organized for B first because we were trying to get a faster paddle, and so we organized our entire canoe and then went back and clocked in for B, which ended up being I don't remember how long B was, 20 miles,
maybe a little more.
Big paddle,
mm-hmm. big paddle,
yeah,
a lot of wind,
and at that point I believe we were trying to go for speed on the paddle specifically, so we wanted to put a ton of our in terms of like the category of like, you know, who paddled that section the fastest. Yeah. So we wanted to do it earlier to give ourselves some time and energy doing it earlier in the race, and then, you know, from there we moved on to that technical mountain biking loop and then back to paddling, skipping E, and then we did pretty much technical mountain biking all through the night. Switched a little bit onto some gravel and some of the Berkey ski trails, and then did the last orienteering section in the morning. I think in terms of hating each other, I don't feel like that happened at all. But I think the only thing that we look back on now and think, aside from maybe wishing we could have done E, is I think we ended up with time and energy to have done some of the other sections. And I think that was hard to know if we would be able to have squeak out those last few points or energy in that sense. So,
Well, I mean, that's interesting because you hadn't done a 30-hour race.
Right.
Was that something you guys were really concerned about? Is like, what if we get to hour 26 and we can't do anymore, which I don't think you would, but was that something you really had to think about as what to do and how long everything was going to take?
I think mostly what we asked from each other, we didn't really know. I don't think any of us went in saying we are for sure doing 100% of the 30 hours. I think we all went in saying, hey, each one of us needs to communicate what our needs are, and we will figure it out as the race is going, what our needs are. And we got to a point where somebody absolutely needed to be done, we all trust and respect each other enough to be able to hear that out and would have figured it out in that moment, whether it was at 12 hours or 30 hours, you know?
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Practical.
Yeah. They called the trail of Black Diamond, Double Black Diamond, whatever. I mean, how was it for you guys? I mean, is that stuff you're used to, or was it a little new to you?
I think we did really well. We all regularly mountain bike in Duluth, which is I think it's rated a gold city. It's it's one of the few cities in the country that has like 50 miles of beautiful professionally built single track right in town. So we're all pretty avid mountain bikers. I think we were impressed by how technical it was. This was the most technical biking section of any of the races we've done. I think we were impressed that we were still on technical mountain biking at like midnight. Like Lisa said, we were on technical trails from 9 p.m. till 5 a.m. and kind of mixing and matching between bike trails and then the Berkey ski trails. And it was pretty wild to be like blasting down these steep ski trails in the dark while our headlamps are dying, and like you have no idea if there's a pothole, and you just kind of go for it and you hope that the person in the front like has cleared a path. But I think it's we played to our strengths, and I think we got 10th on the biking section, so that was we were proud of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was 10th.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys were fairly at home. I mean, a lot of people didn't realize, you know, how technical it was going to be. And kind of, I think it just sort of threw them. I think most people could ride it, but it just kind of threw them a little bit. What was it like not knowing where the checkpoints are? Knowing you just had, you had to ride. And did you ever like
on the bike loop?
Yeah.
I found it.
We missed the first one. Yeah. It's like we were so gung-ho and then we totally didn't see it, but then we got it. We were okay.
And then that was me. I mean, Bria stopped for a checkpoint and like, I had no idea why she was stopping and my feet got caught in my clips and I'm like, what is going on? Why are you stopping? And then I crash into her and I think that was one of our only major
whoopsie, like yeah. in terms of crashes like, and technical like errors there.
Yeah, it was brutal. Just to stop for a checkpoint because you're looking down. It's so technical. You have to look down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the flags are up. And that's where I was like so scared. We're going to miss one of these for sure because I have to look down.
Yeah. That's what I was kind of wondering. Yeah. Because they maybe should have put them like on the ground.
Honestly,
well, yeah, I agree. That's nice, is you can only go so fast on some of the technical stuff. I think it was a flow trail. Maybe we would be paying less attention to the ground and more to the trail, but I do wonder if like we were moving at a really good pace, I think, for the degree of mileage that we put on a technical trail.
Yeah.
But I do think that because it's a little clunky, it sort of slows you down a bit. So that does help a little bit.
Yeah. Seems like it might have been nice. Did you know how many were on the trail? Even?
No. Nothing. Not in that first section because I remember one point we said we really hope there are a few more checkpoints to make this worth it. And it definitely was because I think there were six on that middle biking section. If there had only been four, I think we would have been a little disappointed because it ended up being a lot more work than we were expecting. It's a beautiful trail, but it was a lot of hard work.
It's man-made trail. So it's very chunky for anybody who didn't ride it. It's like rocky and a lot of rock gardens and the rocks are not all like smooth. They're a lot of sharper rocks. Chunky.
Oh, hand-built trails. Like it's pretty, it was unique to ride on a like a well-built, hand-built, but very technical trail. And I hope it doesn't deter future race directors from adding those to races, but it was helpful. They gave people a fair warning.
Yeah.
Some of the trails there are amazing flow trails, but 50% of them still are those kind of pretty rocky, hand-built trails. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the one thing that I noticed with pretty much every team that I saw out there, nobody was nailing it. I mean, it was just a hard technical trail, like you said, not a lot of flow. So, it was nice, but I don't think you should have that much on every race. It might be a little hard if it was more of a linear race to have that kind of trails. So,
I think it was hard. I would imagine it would have been difficult on a hard tail. Which I think most people had hard tails.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We all had tail suspension.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times the bike sections are to get to the cool parts. And no, this bike section was a cool part.
Mm-hmm.
What was your feeling when you finished? I mean, are you ready to go again or were you glad to be done or? You know, what were you feeling?
I think it was a mix. I can speak for myself anyways and say that it was a mix. I was glad to be done and hey, we made it to 30 and I felt like we had done really well. I definitely was tired. And I know at least for me specifically, between the 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. points, I was having some back pain from all the biking, maybe from some falls. So it was a bit of a relief to be done. Mm-hmm. And then there was a part of me, and I think this is maybe part of, you know, competitive people's nature is thinking like, oh, we got done kind of early and like, I am tired, but like, oh, maybe should we have done more?
Yeah.
But it also just pure bliss in that like, hey, that was really fun. We didn't, you know, we had good morale physically did well. No one had any major bonks, major injuries. It was a fun, proud moment, I think.
Yeah, cool. So Lisa, how about you?
I think very similar. I think getting on that bike for the last stretch home, that first 5 minutes, man, I was done sitting on a bike. Very done. And yeah. I knew when we got on that bike for the last stretch back to home base that I was excited that we were heading back to home base. Like I was tired. But I agree with Karina where I got back and I'm still like talking and communicating and feeling a little almost bubbly. And I'm like, I didn't push myself enough, you know, like, could we have kept going? Could we have gotten a few more points? You know, but I know, I think all of, I mean, I still think we did well. Like, I can't get mad at the fact we didn't keep going. Cause it was like, yeah, we pushed ourselves. We did well. And we're all happy with ourselves. So.
Yeah. I don't know if you felt this, Lisa, or even Bria, but there was even a point of feeling a little overwhelmed because I think, you know, you're just so go, go, go in your mindset and in your physical state that all of a sudden it stops and it gets over. And then I don't know about other people, but I'm kind of processing all of it. Like I'm just kind of sitting there and just, I'm just replaying all of the 30 hours worth of stuff. And oh, I wonder how that went, wonder how this feels, you know? So it kind of just all hits you right in that moment. So it's a multitude of emotions.
I also think the weird part about AR that we've talked about almost after every race is you're pushing yourself mentally, physically for so many hours. And then you cross that line and it's just like, it's done. Like, it's like such a stark go to stop that your brain is just like, did we do that? Or did I, especially when you're fatigued, you're like, maybe I just dreamt that. Like, I should be sleeping right now. Right. I mean, I've only been awake for a few too many hours, but your brain like cannot compute why it stopped, you know?
Just want to keep going.
Yeah.
I think there's something in every time you kind of, this is a little bit what Karina was saying, but every time you do another big adventure to race nonstop for 30 hours, after you're done with the race, it's like just another tool in your, like, your tough kit where you're like, oh yeah, I did that and I am capable of that. And I have no, you know, you just don't have a better understanding of where your limits are and what you can push yourself to do. And it's exciting to think about like, well, what else can I do if I can race nonstop for 30 hours and finish in good style and still finish as good friends and like excited. And I mean, we went to an OAR concert within 2 hours and like danced at the front of the stage. kind of like stiffly danced to a live OAR concert. So we definitely had a lot of extra energy. And I also passed out sitting upright on a chair, which I've never done before. So I think also looking back at the race, I like the idea of having mini accomplishments. Like we got all the checkpoints on the sections we did in the first Cloverleaf. We got all the checkpoints for the big bike section. And then we got like all the checkpoints that we were proud to get on the main orienteering. There was two that were kind of like off on the other side of the main road. And we definitely could have gotten those, but I'm happy that we didn't skip. And we pushed ourselves, skip any of the main checkpoints, and we really pushed ourselves. So yeah, it's just like every little, it's nice to break it into mini sections at least, because for the big races.
But. Yeah. So obviously the race is a success because you're the national champions, but how do you rate the race that you ran, like on 1 to 10?
7? Is that unrealistic?
Yeah.
Because like there's room for improvement, but we're proud of where we, what we did, you know, but there is room for improvement. So you have to give yourself a couple.
Yeah. I'm really proud. Like the paddle section, again, we were 13th, but we were within 2 minutes of the four teams ahead of us in a 3.5 hour section. So that means that we actually are pretty strong paddlers. And then that we got, I can't remember, I'm sorry if it's 10th or 11th in the mountain biking section. So we had a little snafu on the middle nighttime biking section, and I basically added 6 hours of like very technical mountain biking. 6 hours.
6 miles.
No, 6 miles.
6 miles. 6 miles of technical biking to our to the middle of the night. And I mean, that's just how adventure racing goes. Like, sometimes you make big mistakes. Yeah. But I'll speak for all of us. Like, we were pretty excited about ourselves and what our potential is. And I would love this. I think we're pretty psyched on being a competitive overall team and not just a women's only team.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do you guys need to do step it up to be a top 10 overall team? Is it, do you think it's just experience? You think your fitness is there?
I think strategy probably pretty close. Definitely the biggest strategy for us is like a huge understanding big picture. We really like, and I don't know how you practice that necessarily, except just doing more races and understanding, I don't know, figuring it out in your brain. And I think each one of us has our one weaker sport that I could improve on my running, endurance, 100%.
Biking. That would be my weakness.
Yeah.
And I think too, adding on to what Lisa said, and also what Bria said too, is that we sort of know that we can push ourselves physically more. So we know that there's a lot of room for growth and strategy. Some of that comes with experience. I think some of that comes with having processed what we've learned from this race, mm-hmm. which we've done a lot of. And I think the other bit of it's like, okay, how much more can we also like physically push some of those things and push our ability to be more efficient, maybe at exchanges and rest stops and conserving energy in areas that make sense and pushing our energy in areas that might be to our advantage.
I also think we kind of made some big mistakes during the Nationals race. Like at one point after a paddle section, all of our clothing was like soaking wet. And we spent a lot of time like trying to like, God, can we even finish this race if we're starting at 9 o'clock and all of our clothing is drenched. And so we thought we kept everything dry. It just didn't work out that way. And our calories were soaking wet. I mean, it was just a lesson learned, and so getting the gear dialed is probably something. And actually after the race, after we got home, we all met up for ice cream and we sat for like an hour and a half and talked about the details of like what we could improve on and really focused on the gear piece of it. So I'm excited for our next race together to kind of hash out those little details. So I think that'll add a lot.
Yeah. So all right, so we're about ready to finish up here. So this is kind of a two-part question. And it's, what's coming up? So what's, are you done racing for the year? What are you looking at for next year as far as racing? And do any of you have any real cool just adventures coming up? Yeah. Come on, somebody. All right, Korea? Yeah.
Okay. I'll go. I think as a group, we're done probably adventure racing, but we are always scheming day adventures or trips. And I think we're going to meet up this Friday and go orienteering and trail running together. So, and all winter, we're ice skating and skiing in the Boundary Waters together. And there's we have all sorts of adventures all year. I think as a team, we're really excited to race again next year. We are definitely talking about California, and I think I will just speak for the group that I love. I think we have a top 15, 20 finish would be awesome, and definitely having more races of clearing the course early on next season would be a personal goal of mine.
So Lisa, you got anything planned?
Second all that, I just took a week off already and kind of mountain biked around Wisconsin. And so in terms of coming up, I'm just waiting to figure out what the seasons, like up here, we kind of have to play with what the season presents to us, last year we had a phenomenal ice skating season and I didn't have ice skates. This year I have ice skates. I'm really excited to hopefully have an ice skating season. And then, you know, it, depending on how much snow we get, we kind of have to play, shoot by the hip kind of thing. Where, no, I don't have anything planned, but I'm not really a planning person.
Yeah. Something will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. For me, my summer adventure season's wrapping up. So I'm sort of done with running and mountaineering and some climbing and transitioning, like I think Brian and Lisa said, to the seasonal flair, which right now is some rock climbing and then hopefully a lot of ice climbing. And then continuing to just do the fun stuff we do like every weekend. I know Lisa and I were talking about mountain biking and doing some long rides this weekend, or doing the Duluth Traverse at some point, which crosses the whole city of Duluth. I know Rhea works some weekends, but I know she has some climbing trips coming up too. So I think we're all just sort of transitioning seasons, transitioning into what's going to feel new and fresh for this time of year.
Nice. Yeah, you guys got a lot of choices coming up.
Yeah.
So, cool.
So, always.
Yeah. So I don't know if you guys know this, but I think I told Bria that, this will be episode like 301 or 302. And in all the years, my wife had never asked for me to do a podcast with anybody until you guys. So, and she was not wrong.
Well, thank you to your wife.
Yeah. And she may show up to go to the Boundary Waters with you. She's done a couple of Boundary Water trips, and she's always ready to go again. So
come on up. It's a beautiful area.
That will be the payment.
Anytime.
Yeah. So, cool. Great. So
yeah. And thank you for letting us share our story. And
I always love these, because meeting gymnasts and people that kayak, canoe when they're babies and go to the North Pole, it's like, damn, I get to meet a lot of cool people. So thanks very much for the chat. And this is where we do the awkward byes on Zoom and I stop recording.
Thanks, Randy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great to chat.
Okay, bye.
Take a beautiful girl and